You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather. Rest of today, cloudy and a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 85 expected. We're still seeing southwest winds of about 20 miles an hour, gusting up to around 30 miles an hour. So that should cut the temperature. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms with a low of 64 expected, south winds of 10 to 15 miles an hour, and an 80% chance of rain. Tomorrow, showers are likely with a chance of thunderstorms, 70% chance of precipitation, and a high of 78 expected. By tomorrow night, that'll be down to a 40% chance of rain with a low of 57. Looking ahead to the end of the week, high of 66 and 40% chance of showers through to Saturday. Taking a look at temperatures around the state right now, in DeKalb, it is mostly sunny at 76. Chicago at O'Hare Airport, partly sunny and 75 at the moment. In Joliet, mostly sunny and 74. In Macomb right now, it is 76 degrees. Bloomington, Illinois, mostly sunny and 75. Sunny in Peoria and Decatur, where it is 76 and 78, respectively. And mostly sunny in Springfield, where it's 75. In Champaign at Willard Airport, it's 77 degrees right now. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
I'm Chris Berube, and you're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. In Missouri this week, a constitutional amendment was passed that, pending a voter approval next year, will make sure that farmers have a constitutional right to, well, do their job. Seems simple enough, but the Right to Farm Amendment, as it's being called, has been pretty controversial. Nathan Vickers has been covering this story for the TV station KOLR in Springfield, Missouri, and he joins us now to discuss the implications of right to farm. So, Nathan, please explain to us, what is the right to farm exactly?
So it was actually last week, really, that this was all taking place. There was this constitutional amendment proposed and eventually passed that essentially would guarantee farmers the right to practice in Missouri. And the controversy was that, on the one hand, you have, you know, the right to farm, and it certainly seems like an inherent right in an agricultural state like Missouri. But on the other hand, you had the opponents of this amendment who were just really afraid that it's just kind of a step toward deregulation, I suppose, that it would just eventually lead to, you know, lawsuits claiming that the state or a county government or, you know, an outside special interest group was potentially imposing on someone's right to farm.
So what is the actual wording of the amendment? Like, what does it say in terms of the new law?
It's funny because the wording changed several times throughout when it was introduced. It very explicitly stated that the intent was to keep the state from interfering with the business of livestock producers. But over time, it was sort of amended, and it's loading up the final wording now. Okay, here it is. Upon voter approval, this proposed constitutional amendment affirms the right of farmers and ranchers to engage in farming and ranching practices in the state, subject to the duly authorized powers conferred by Article 6 of the Missouri Constitution. So it's kind of this sweeping statement, and I think that's what worried a lot of people, that it just affirms the right of farmers and ranchers to engage in farming. People who sort of debated against this really wanted some sort of strongly worded clause in there about local control, and they never really got it. They do include that reference to Article 6, which basically just highlights the powers of county governments to sort of exist and then zone. But there's no real wording in there that says that, say, a big hog farm came into your county or city, that people there would be able to protest that or somehow keep it from forming.
So why do we need right-to-farm legislation? I mean, why specifically does there have to be kind of a stronger policy defending farmers like this?
Well, personally, I don't know if there does. I think the people who proposed this and got it passed were really worried about some past legislation in Missouri called Prop B. And that was in 2010, I think. But essentially, Prop B was this constitutional amendment that outlawed puppy mills in the state of Missouri. Missouri had a lot of really highly concentrated dog breeding operations, and there were some inhumane activities going on. when they passed this Prop B thing, a lot of the marketing behind it came from the Humane Society of the United States, which is this out-of-state group. And I think that a lot of rural representatives and senators in the state are afraid that something like that could eventually happen in the, you know, the livestock industry, that a group like HSUS or PETA or something like that might come in and get some legislation passed in the state that would somehow limit or even illegalize certain livestock practices in Missouri.
Specifically, people who are worried that this might be an overreach or this might be used as an inappropriate legal defense, I mean, what are they worried about? Like, what kind of abuses do they see happening?
I think they just see that it's unclear and that there's a lot of uncertainty with some wording like this. I mean, it's really the context that they're worried about, that this amendment represents a strong movement among rural senators and representatives. It represents a movement toward deregulation.
Now, you reported last week on, or you mentioned in a report, a farm in Arkansas that had been controversial that kind of really brought up some interesting questions about this debate, which was a farm that essentially went way beyond the capacity that it was zoned for, that it was supposed to, in Mount Judea, Arkansas, but that was able to say that they, you know, were making kind of the right-to-farm argument. They were saying, well, yeah, we're a farm. We need to be bigger than maybe we're allowed to be on this particular plot of land.
Right. So the story there is that this hog farm went in, it applied for a permit, got it, and was able to build right on a major watershed, that water that flows into this really scenic and very touristy river nearby. The farmer didn't break any laws. He didn't do anything, you know, that was contrary to anything. I don't think he even thought it would be an issue. But because of the way the Arkansas permit process works, he was able to file and build. Once you file the permit, the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality will post it on their website for 30 days, and if no one complains, then you're free to go. There's no local notification process or anything like that in Arkansas. So this guy kind of, I don't think he intended to, but he unintentionally kind of snuck in and built this hog farm, and it's made a lot of people mad in the region because he's right on that major watershed. Certainly, this farmer in Arkansas feels that he has the right to farm and the right to be there. I think even his neighbors feel that this man has the right to farm and the right to be there. But I think that other people in the state, in the region, feel that they sort of have a right to decide what goes on in their community. They don't feel that right was granted to them, and so there's this tension that has come about between that right to free enterprise and, you know, the right to decide what goes on in your backyard.
Nathan, what's next? I mean, is there any follow-up now that this amendment has been passed?
Right. The amendment's passed in the Missouri legislature, but it will be something that Missouri voters will decide on in the fall of next year, November 2014. Really, it's hard to tell what will happen until then. I would say that the next legislative session will be a really interesting one following this one, because we've had so many agricultural bills in the Missouri legislature this year.
Nathan Vickers is a reporter for the TV station KOLR in Springfield, Missouri, where he covers farming issues and lots of other local stuff. You can follow him on Twitter at Nathan Vickers. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. This is WILL Radio. When news of Yahoo's purchase of Tumblr hit yesterday, or this week I should say, Tumblr users took their reactions online. The posts were quirky and sharp, with plenty of worry about the future of the website. Ilya Maritz of member station WNYC reports that the site's users want to, quote, keep Tumblr weird.
When word got out about the acquisition, Tumblr users reacted in their distinctive way. Homemade, quirky, sharp. One site showed an animated GIF of Marissa Mayer, Yahoo's CEO, wearing a diabolical smile as $20 bills rain down over her. Another Tumblr shows a cartoon Yahoo Brown shirt drinking from a jug of Tumblr tears.
I was kind of upset at first.
Laura Olin ran the official Obama 2012 campaign Tumblr. She didn't take the news well.
Just because I was a Flickr user and also actually a Delicious user, and both of those acquisitions didn't seem to go well.
Yahoo bought both Flickr and Delicious in 2005 and managed to alienate existing users. Yahoo's challenge now is to keep the trust of people who've created more than 100 million blogs through Tumblr. people like?
David Fung. I'm the co-founder of mensweardog.tumblr.com.
That's Menswear Dog. You really need to see Fung's Shiba Inu mugging for the camera while wearing an Armani leather jacket to get it. Fung has 100,000 followers.
You know, I just spent a day putting it together, and then the next day it blew up, and GQ was calling me. It just speaks to the power of that community.
The Tumblr community. Since the acquisition became official, the blogs have calmed down somewhat. Laura Olin says it helps that Yahoo CEO Meyer made the announcement in Tumblrese.
You know, like the words, we won't screw it up. So I think they're doing a really good job of acknowledging the anxiety that Tumblr users have.
Now Olin says, just don't screw it up. For NPR News, I'm Ilya Meritz in New York.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, New Yorker writer George Packer's inside history of the great unwinding of America's 20th century way of life and where we stand now, plus the controversial and brilliant Henry Ford and the world he invented. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tonight from 9 to 11 on AM 580.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 21st of May, 2013. It's the birthday of Henri Rousseau, born in Laval, France, 1844. He was a tax collector, did not start painting until he was in his early 40s, retired at the age of 49 so that he could paint full-time. Rousseau, famous for painting primitive style jungle scenes. He was ridiculed in his lifetime, although many other painters admired him, including Picasso, who in the fall of 1908 was walking down the street in Montmartre when he noticed a portrait of a woman among a stack of canvases for sale outside a junk shop. The proprietor told Picasso that you could paint over that canvas and reuse it, but Picasso knew the work was a Rousseau, and he bought it. 1881, on this day, Clara Barton founded the American Red Cross. She was a shy young woman with a stutter. She began teaching 1839, age of 18, overcame her shyness. And early on, Clara Barton said, I may sometimes be willing to teach for nothing, but if paid at all, I shall never do a man's work for less than a man's pay. Took a job in 1854 at the U.S. Patent Office in Washington, worked hard, and indeed, within a year, was making a salary equal to that of the men in the office. By 1861, war was breaking out, and when the Battle of Bull Run took place, not so far from Washington, a major defeat for the Union, Clara Barton read reports of the battle and realized that the Army had not seriously considered or provided for wounded soldiers. So she began to ride along in ambulances. And afterward, after the war, traveling to Geneva, she learned about the International Red Cross and founded the American Red Cross on this day in 1881. It's the birthday of Alexander Pope, London, 1688, who wrote the lines, Sir, I admit your general rule that every poet is a fool, but you yourself may serve to show it that every fool is not a poet. Here's a poem for today by Liesl Mueller entitled Romantics. Johannes Brahms and Clara Schumann, the modern biographers worry how far it went, their tender friendship. They wonder just what it means when he writes, he thinks of her constantly, his guardian angel, beloved friend. The modern biographers ask the rude, irrelevant question of our age, as if the event of two bodies meshing together establishes the degree of love. forgetting how softly Eros walked in the 19th century, how a hand held overlong or a gaze anchored in someone's eyes could unseat a heart, and nuances of address not known in our egalitarian language could make the redolent air tremble and shimmer with the heat of possibility. Each time I hear the intermezzi, sad and lavish in their tenderness, I imagine the two of them sitting in a garden among late-blooming roses and dark cascades of leaves, letting the landscape speak for them, leaving nothing to overhear.